So, we begin now the third lesson, in which we introduce a third concept above the one of the previous two ones. And this concept is the environmental correction factor, K2. K2 is defined in some other ISO standard. There are a number of standards which require the evaluation of this environmental correction factor, and then this standard specify to detract this value, to subtract it from the measured sound pressure level. The concept is that the environmental correction factor is taken away from the measurement result for bringing back the result of the measurement to a theoretical free field, removing the effect of the rule. This is particularly relevant, for example, for assessing the noise produced at the workplace of a machine. If you are builder of a machine, like many factories here in Parma are, they are maker of machinery, particularly of machinery for bottling, for packaging food, for making food, and so on, or for making beer, or for making Coca-Cola, for example. All the Coca-Cola produced around the world is produced with machines which are constructed here in Parma. So, for all this kind of machinery, it is required to measure how loud is the sound level at the workplace. The standard for making this measurement specify to remove the environmental effect by subtracting this magic number K2 from the value measured at the workplace with your sound level meter. This makes it possible to measure the noise of the machine independently of the acoustical properties of the room where the machine is being operated. Okay? Because if the same machine is installed in a building with a very good sound absorption, then the level will be smaller, as we have learned in the previous hours. If instead the room is very reverberant, the same machine will make a louder noise to be measured, but the machine is always the same. So the standard specifies to make the measurement at the workplace and then to subtract K2 from the measured value for bring you back from the upper curve, which is what's happening in the room with the reverberant sound field, and you bring it down to the free field behavior of the room, like if the room was not causing any increase in level due to reflection. So what is K2? K2 is at a given distance, because it is a quantity which depends strongly on the distance from the source. At a given distance, and the distance is the workplace. Every machine has a control panel, and it is there that you have to measure the noise emission of your machine. And so you go at the defined workplace as defined in the manual of the machine. You go there with your sound level meter, and then you will measure a value which in general which will be larger than what had happened in a free field. The difference between the sound level in the semi-reverberant or truly reverberant field and the sound level which had been measured at the very same position in free field, this by definition is the environmental factor K2. In some other ISO standard, this concept is common in at least 12 different standards, perhaps 15. But in some of them, I don't know for which reason, instead of being named K2, it is named DLF, which is just a formal thing. The concept is the same. This quantity expressed how much the environment, being in a closed environment, push up the sound pressure level in comparison with the pressure level which you had measured at the same distance from the source in free field. So the concept is very simple. And very simple is also to evaluate this number, because we know what is the equation for the semi-reverberant field, the one which also includes these terms, which is the effect of the room, and you subtract, take away the free field only, and by definition the difference of the two is K2. If you work out the computation, making some trick with the logarithm, which I am not going to make now, I bring you directly the result, and the result is this one. So you can substitute the things inside and make the simplification. This is the formula, but in this formula you can play another trick. You see here there is 4 pi Greek squared d. This is the surface surrounding your source at the distance where your listening position is. Is the surface of a sphere. And the Q factor is 2 in most cases, because inside a production environment, inside a factory, the floor is always hard and reflecting, and the machine is mounted on the floor, is not suspended 3 meters above the floor or 5 meters above the floor. The machine is on the ground. So the Q factor is 2. The surface, in theory, is a complex sphere, but in the moment in which you divide by 2, you can think that the surface is a hemisphere centered on the machine. So in practice, if you assume that this is the surface of an hemisphere, the equation becomes this one. K2 is 10 times logarithm of 1 plus 4 S first, which is the so-called enveloping surface, the surface surrounding the machine and passing through the ear at the workplace. Okay. This gives you the K2 value. S1 is the enveloping surface area, considering a semisphere theoretically, which is this expression. Theoretically, because in practice S1 is a surface with the same shape of the machine. If the machine is of parallelepiped form, is a box, S1 usually is a box bigger than the machine, typically 1 meter bigger, because by convention the distance of the worker close to the machine, it is assumed that the worker stay at 1 meter from the machine. So S1 is the enveloping surface surrounding your machine at 1 meter distance. If the machine is a big box, is a rectangle, then also the surrounding surface will have exactly the same shape, just bigger, because it is drawn at 1 meter distance. Okay. If you substitute to the absorption area of the room the expression coming from the Sabine formula, then you get that other final expression of the environmental correction factor. All what is written on this sheet is true whenever the Sabine hypotheses are met. When I did introduce the Sabine equation in the previous hour, I did not explain you when it is true and when it is not. For the Sabine formulation, but also for the semi-reverberant field here formulation, to hold, to be true, some conditions are necessary. there is one condition on the distribution of the absorption. The absorption should be more or less uniform for all the surface of the room. You cannot have only one surface strongly absorbing, for example the ceiling, and all the others strongly reflecting. If this happens, the formulas which we have introduced in the past 2 hours are not accurate enough. Second, the shape of the room. The room must have the 3 dimensions more or less similar. The longer dimension should not exceed 3 times the shorter dimension. Usually the shorter dimension is height, and usually the longer dimension is length. So we can say that these formulas hold if the length is not more than 3 times the height of the room. If you are in a very long corridor, for example, that is not true anymore, and all these formulas here become wrong. Okay? So in normal room, this is true. Everything is easy. Everyone can evaluate very easily K2 by making a very simple measurement of reverberation time of the room, knowing the volume of the room, which is just a matter of measuring 3 distances and multiplying them together, and evaluating the extension of the surface surrounding your machine, but again, that can be measured with a tape meter, and it's easy. And it works and provides a correct value of K2 in most cases. But what happens when you go in the real world of the factories? In most factories, the room does not comply with the Sebing hypothesis. So the Sebing formula and the semi-reverberant field formula don't work in this kind of building. These buildings are wide, they can even 200 meters long by 100 meters wide, but they are not tall, proportional with those large horizontal dimensions. They are typically 6 to 8 meters tall. Okay, 8 meters is not really short, it's twice this room, so they are not really short. But compared with the large dimension we have horizontally, these buildings are flat and short. Large and short. Okay? They are not the 3 dimensions comparable to each other. Second thing is fittings. Inside this room, the air is not free. The sound is not free to propagate like in this room. Here there is nothing inside the room, apart those pipes here, but it's an exception. In most rooms there is absolutely nothing obstructing sound propagation. In this factory system, you have a lot of pipeworks and conveyors and structures and lighting and heating and so on. So, okay, these are not walls. They are not really blocking the sound. They just had scattering, they had diffraction, strange wave effects which are not easy to predict and to contain in a simple formula. So the sound propagation inside this space does not follow the simple decay laws which we have seen in the previous 2 hours. So both the shape of the room and what is inside the room cause systematic deviation from the theoretical formulas. What we can do? We can check what happens with a quite simple measurement system, which is made of an omnidirectional sound source, a dodecahedron in this example. This black spherical thing here is a loudspeaker equipped with 12 drivers, which radiate a perfect spherical wavefront, and a normal sound level meter here. That is exactly the same unit which I did bring to you in the classroom some weeks ago. So we repeat the measurement moving at increasing distance from the source, and we try to experimentally measure this curve and see if the experimental result follows the theoretical decay or not. So we are going to make this experiment in this kind of factories of typical this is a bottling line, for example. Okay. These are the results. Thessaloniki. This is a beer factory where they make Heineken beer. Okay. It is a Heineken factory in Greece. And it was a new building, a completely new line mounted there, where the owner of the factory, which is Heineken, was complying for the excessive noise, which was thought to come from excessively noisy machinery. Instead, what was happening was that the K factor, the K2 value, was really very big. This is a chart in which the red line is the free field propagation, the theoretical 6 decibel by doubling distance propagation versus distance from the source. You see the building is very large because we managed to measure up to 100 meters from the source. This factory was 200 meters long. The source was placed in the center, so going to the center to the periphery, they take 100 meters. And the decay did not follow. Of course, it did not follow the free field. It is inside a building. But the shape is not the shape predicted by theory. Falling down initially very close to the free field and then going flat. It's completely different. First of all, even very close to the source, the environmental correction factor is quite huge. And in this region here, around 10 meters, it is incredibly larger than the value predicted by theory. Let me see the comparison not with the free field, but with the theoretical semi-reverberant field computed with the correct value of this room, the real volume of this room and the real reverberation time, which we both measured in that room in Thessaloniki. You see that at the beginning the difference is big, the maximum difference is here around 10 meters, and instead going at much larger distance, instead of having a flat constant sound pressure level in a perfectly diffuse field, you never get a constant value. Instead, the level continues falling down even more. That is due to the fitting in the room, to the presence of all these obstacles. If you go very far, you get a lot of attenuation by these obstacles. So you never reach a flat level. You get a value which is becoming instead now much smaller than the theoretical one. So this is reality, this is theory. What is the conclusion? The theory is wrong. Theory is theory. You don't have to trust too much theory. In acoustic, in most cases, theory is very dangerous. It's not an exact science. Okay, this is a concept. In some field of research, researcher tends to trust that the science is exact. This occurs in certain fields, like for example in the study of electromagnetic fields. Our colleague from the electrotechnics department tends to trust that the study of electromagnetic field is one of the field of science where the theory is very close to reality. In our field, acoustic, I must tell you that acoustic is not an exact science. We have very nice theories, But these theories systematically deviate from reality. So don't trust too much in theory. My personal experience is to never trust too much theory, even when working with electromagnetic fields or other fields like structure, resistance of structure or scienza delle costruzioni and so on. I never trust theory by concept. I am quite dubious of everything, because in my research field, if you follow theory, you get very bad surprise. And this is one example. So, explaining the theory and understood the theory, we make the experiment and we see that the theory is wrong. Okay? What to do? Well, if you are close to the source, you should employ a value of K2 which is much bigger than the one predicted by theory. If instead you are very far from the source, then if you use the K2 factor expressed by the theory, you are using a value which is too large. You should reduce the K2 factor from the one predicted by theory. The same fact is happening almost in any kind of factories. Whenever you have a building which is short compared to the horizontal dimension, then this effect is present. Here you see four different factories. This is Thessaloniki in Greece. This is Belfort in France. This is Patras in Greece again, but another town, another factory. And this is Fredericia in Denmark. And in all these four rooms, which are very different, because this one was very reverberant, the reverberation time here was more than 4 seconds. And this instead was very dry, reverberation time here was 0.7 seconds. So an almost dry room, an almost reverberant one, the other two are intermediate, and nevertheless the effect is exactly the same. The theoretically curve is this one, and the experimental one is the blue one. So the two deviate significantly, and always close to the source, the real K2 factor is much bigger than the theoretical one, while far from the source, the real K factor is much smaller. It tends almost to zero. Here we don't see the direct sound, the free field chart. But it comes back to be very close to the free field. So at very large distance, the K2 factor comes back to zero. Let me chart directly K2, because the nice thing of this chart is that this is a way of measuring K2 at every distance. As we measure it, come back to this one, as you measure it, the real decay, and you know the theoretical one, at every measurement point, at every distance, you know the K factor. By measure, it's measured directly. So there is no theory here. You just measure a level, and you subtract the theoretical level given by the free field formula, and this, by definition, is the K factor. So we can make a chart in those four rooms directly of the real K2 value, the blue line again, versus the theoretical K2 value. Here you have the distance in meters. So you see there is a region here where the K2 factor is much larger than the theoretical one, and a region here where the K2 factor, real one, is much smaller than the theoretical one. The example of the workplace of the machine in these four buildings, the nice thing is that the same machine was installed in all four of them. So in these four bottling plants, the same bottling machine was installed, exactly the same machine. So we expected, of course, to measure the same sound pressure level at the workplace. We were not measuring it applying the theoretical K factor, which was almost the same in all the factories. almost 0.5 decibel, the theory was predicting almost the same theoretical value for all the four buildings. Instead, the real K factor was much different, as you see here, and particularly Patrasso, which was not the most reverberant, but it was where the building was shorter, was giving the larger real K2 factor. Okay? Of course, if you have this technology for measuring the real K factor, it's not a problem. You measure the real value and apply to your sound level meter measurement, and then you get the true emission value of your machine. The problem is when the building is not yet built. If the building is there and you are allowed to make the measurement and to know the true K2 factor, then you can subtract it from your SPL measurement and you get the correct value. The second fact, very important, is the last one here. Whenever K2 is very large, this means that there is big potential for sound reduction by introducing in the room additional absorption. If you look at the traditional formulas and you are far from the source, if you are here, in this region here, around the critical distance, so you are not in the free field only, you start to get some effect of the environment. More or less, the workplace is always around the critical distance in this room. But what happens at this point? This point is just 3 decibels above the reverberant sound level, in theory, because the direct sound here is equal to the reverberant field. For example, they are both 97, I don't know, a value. If you sum to equal levels, you know that you get 3 decibels more. So this point here at the critical distance is just 3 decibels above the reverberant level. And the reverberant level is the same everywhere. So if you make a room treatment in this situation, in the best case, you could reduce the sound level by 3 decibels, but not more. This is what the theory predicts. In most cases, following the theory, introducing absorption in this kind of room is not providing a significant benefit at the workplace, because you get a theoretical reduction of perhaps of 1 or 1.2 decibels and not more. The theory predicts that a room treatment is not effective. In reality, K2 is much larger than what is predicted by theory. And whenever K2 is very large, then there is big potential for reducing significantly the sound pressure level at the workplace using absorption, using absorbing panel on the ceiling, for example, which is the typical place where you can suspend absorbing object without obstructing the workplace. This can be seen very easily employing an empirical formula, which is called the Farina-Fornali formula. This formula is not based on a theory like the one developed by Kutruf regarding the semi-reverberant field. This one is purely empirical. It's just the fitting of those experimental results which I have shown you before and which we repeated in dozens of factories of different kinds, not only bottling, also packaging, also tessile, textile machine, and so on. Fitting all this data, we managed to find this formula, which is more or less the same structure as the formula introduced at the beginning and regarding the normal environmental correction factor. This formula here for being more precise, in this last version, in which you see a volume here, a reverberation time here, and a surface, an enveloping surface here. Our formula has more or less the same structure. In fact, here you see the enveloping surface, 2 pi grid per the squared distance. You can actually write it as first, as in the original formula. Here is the reverberation time, here you have 0.16 coming from the Sabine formula, and the terms appearing within brackets, this one is a volume. In the original formula, here there was the volume of the room. So actually this formula is not very different from the original one. The difference is that instead of inserting the whole volume of this flat and wide room inside the formula, we use this sort of reduced volume, smaller volume, which is a volume which does not depend on the dimension in horizontal of the room. It only depends on H, which is the height of the room, and the reverberation time and the surface surrounding the machine. So this formula estimates an effective or apparent volume, which introduced in the classic formula, provides a new estimate of K, which is in much better agreement with the experiment than the theoretical value based on the same formula but with the total volume of the room. And here you see the comparison with experimental value. The Farina-Fornari formula is the orange curve. The blue one is the experimental one, and you see a very good agreement between the theoretical value predicted with our formula and experimental result. Instead, the classical Sabine formulation is the red line, and as shown before, it deviates significantly from reality. So employing this simple formula, because it's not much more complex than the other one, you just have to recompute the volume using the expression here within brackets. But once you have got this estimate of the volume, the formula is the same. And you get a correct estimation at every distance. And the value which you obtain are almost exactly the measured value of the K2 factor. Okay, we don't take here the third column showing the value with our formula, but the values are almost the same here. I should add in the slide the column of our values for completing the comparison. What I want to explain to you now is how this formula can be used for assessing the decrease of sound pressure level obtainable with room treatment, with adding absorption to a room. Let we consider a typical factory with this data. The total volume of the building is 70,000 cubic meters. You see the measurement here. The height of the building is that 7 meters, which is a quite typical value for most factories. The reverberation time was initially 3 seconds, but after treatment with absorbing material suspended below the ceiling, you reduce the reverberation time from 3 seconds down to 0.7 seconds. We now evaluate how much reduction in sound pressure level at the listening position you will get with the traditional formulation and with our formula. These two curves show you already the reduction as a function of distance. The traditional formulation predicts almost no reduction until 3 or 4 meters from the source. Typically, the average distance between the center of the machine and the workplace is around 3 or 4 meters. So we are here. According, let me look, for example, what's happening at 10 meters. At 10 meters, is the typical distance for a very big machine. Not in all factories we have this big machine. In the case of the bottling machine, yes, because there are very large machines with a diameter of 6 or 7 meters where there are those round things with all the bottles running around. So in this case, effectively, the distance can be 10 meters. In other type of machinery, like in the textile machinery, the machines are smaller, so the distance is more close to 4 meters, for example. But let me see what happens here at 10 meters. At 10 meters, you have a real sound reduction due to the room treatment of 5.5 decibels, which is a quite substantial reduction. Usually plenty enough for bringing a level which was too loud within the acceptance limit. Usually when you measure, you find your level exceeding the limit by 3, maximum 4 decibels. So if you manage to get a reduction of 5 decibels, you are okay. You bring your level, the exposure level of your worker, below the acceptance limit, and you are okay. Instead, if you use the semi-reverberant traditional formulation, you predict a sound reduction with the same room treatment of just 1.7 dB, which is not enough in most cases. So what happens? That the owner of the building does not apply room treatment because employing the traditional formulation, it looks that it will be money wasted because there is no real reduction inserting those absorbing material in the room. Instead, people who, despite what the theory says, attempted to do this kind of room treatment experience very good results, much better than what traditional theory predicts. Because in reality we know the reason. The environmental correction factor was in reality much larger than the value predicted by the theory. So when you apply room treatment, this very large environmental correction factor vanishes, goes away, and you get a reduction of many decibels. This is the reason for which in many factories you don't see the presence of proper room treatment. And instead, in most factories, particularly in those very low buildings, the room treatment, the absorption of substances under the ceiling is very important to be. If you install those absorbing materials, the noise inside the factories reduces significantly, in some cases even more than 5 decibels. I have seen cases in a factory where they are making socks, female socks, Calzedonia, it was actually the factory near Mantua, and then the reduction was more than 8 decibels after the room treatment, and the theory was predicting 2 decibels, but they wanted to do the same, the treatment, despite what the theory was saying, and they were happy of the result, a reduction which was much larger than the theoretical prediction. Okay, so let me draw the conclusion. Employing the traditional formula causes a significant underestimation of the environmental effect of the reverberant sound field. Luckily enough, since 3 years now, we have a new European standard, N415/9, which allows the experimental measurement of the true value of the environmental correction factor with that technique of the omnidirectional source and going at increasing distance and wheeling the curve of environmental correction factor versus distance. So it is easy nowadays to perform the direct measurement of K2. In the case when you cannot do the measurement, you can still estimate quite accurately the K2 value employing the Farina-Fornari formula, and you can estimate how large will be the effect of a room treatment with absorption material employing this formula instead of the traditional formula. Everything okay? Any question?
You talked before in the first part of the lecture about the analogy between the propagation of light and the propagation of sound. So, would it be possible to estimate the propagation of sound precisely using the same algorithm that I used in the software of ray tracing, for instance?
Yes, there are software like the one which you are going to use in the lab in January. One of the lab will be employing this kind of ray tracing software. We will employ our own software, which is called Ramsete, which you can download from the website, and you can use it in demo mode. And that is not really ray tracing, it is pyramid tracing, which is a more advanced algorithm, but the concept is quite similar. It's beam tracing. So instead of tracing rays which are like a laser ray, which not diverge, we are tracing beams, which are increasing cross-section. But this is a computational detail. In practice, it's ray tracing, of course. So yes, we can use the optical similitude for computing sound propagation in room. The limit of this model is that in light, the wavelength is always much smaller than object. In acoustic, this is true only at high frequency. At very low frequency, it's not true anymore that the wavelength is much smaller than the size of object. So this kind of ray tracing software is going to give you accurate results above 500 Hz, more or less, and significant errors at low frequency. If you want to estimate the sound at 100 Hz, using ray tracing produces an error of several decibels, 4, 5, 6 decibels or more. The lower the frequency, the larger the error, for this reason. Light instead have a span of wavelength which is very small, because the visible light only range between 0.4 to 0.7 nanometers. So the longer wavelength and the smaller wavelength are in a factor which are less of 2. It's less of 2, the longest wavelength compared to the shortest wavelength. In acoustics, we go from 20 Hz to 20,000 Hz. So there is a factor of 1,000 between the smaller wavelength, which is just 1 millimeter, to the longer wavelength, which is 10 meters. You understand? So it's impossible to employ the same theory over such a very wide range of wavelength, which is true at very high frequency, is always wrong at very low frequency. And the opposite also is true. If you employ some kind of numerical modeling technique which works very well at low frequency, like finite element modeling, this is only going to work up to a few hundred Hz. For example, 200 Hz. Above 200 Hz, finite element modeling in acoustic doesn't work anymore. You need to switch to another technique, like ray tracing, or it's impossible to treat such a wide spectrum with the same theory, because all those theories are approximated, and the approximation which hold at high frequency are wrong at low frequency, and vice versa. Okay, so for finishing the lesson now, we make a very small example of employing the Sabin formula in Excel, attempting to simulate the reverberation time of this room. What we need to know for evaluating the reverberation time of this room? most we need to know some geometrical information, plus we need to know the absorption coefficient of the material, which we can read from tables which are reported on manuals or on scientific books, or you can find easily them on the internet. So let me start from this room and we evaluate the absorption. Evaluation of absorption. We start with the floor, which is usually, let me write, surface area, alpha, and A, which is the total absorption. Let me start with the floor. The floor in this room is about 12 meters long by 10 meters wide, so it is 12 multiplied 10 is 120 square meters. Okay, let me write this way. The absorption coefficient of the concrete is 0.02, and so the corresponding absorption is 120 multiplied 0.02, which makes only 2.4 square meters of absorption. Then we have the ceiling. The ceiling is larger because there is all those gradients going up and down. So we evaluate that the surface of the ceiling is the surface of the floor multiplied by 1.5. Okay? The absorption coefficient is more or less the same because also this structure is by concrete, and so we get an absorption area of the ceiling of 3.6 square meters. Then we have the walls. So the walls in this room are 12. The room is more or less 5 meters tall. So let me write this way. Is 12 by 5 plus 10 by 5, which is the wall which I have here behind me. There is no, because it is almost everything glass. And then we have here again 12 by 5. This is the surface of the wall. Those walls are in gypsum boards, which have an absorption coefficient more or less of 10%, and so they provide a total absorption of 17 square meters. Then we have windows. Windows are made by glass. We have, taking these three away and bringing them there, we have almost one complete wall of glass. So it will be 10 by 5. 50 square meters of glass. The glass is one of the most reflecting things which exist in nature, even more than concrete. The absorption coefficient is 0.01, and so the absorption area given by those windowing, those glassing inside this room, is almost zero, 0.5 meter. Okay, we have closed the box. Now we should have the objects which are inside the box. We have this screen, projection screen here. The screen is inside the room because behind it we have the wall. But the object is inside. It has a size which can be 6 by 4 meter perhaps. So it is 24 square meter with an absorption coefficient which is perhaps 0.2. providing a total absorption area of 4.8 square meter. Then we have the furniture, which contains your desks, your seats, my desk, and my seat. The total area of these things, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8, 16. Each one is 5 meter long, per 1 meter tall, 0.8, capital, and the debt is typically 0.8 again. Plus T1, let's say other 4 square meter. 200 square meter of desks. The desks are made of wood and steel, so it is things which don't absorb a lot. Let's say 0.05 as a typical absorption coefficient of this desk. Then there is people. In this moment, in the people, there are more or less 20 people. And the absorption area of each of you are not dressed very heavily, so let me say 0.75 square meter of absorption for every guy in this room now, which gives you 15 square meter. So the total absorption in this room is the sum of the wall column, and this 53 square meters. Let me name this cell atom. Okay? Second thing we need is the volume of the room. The volume of the room is 12 multiplied by 10 multiplied by 5. 600 cubic meters. And we call this B. We now add the summing formula. Let me get the summing formula from the previous this one. So the summing formula, why? Special. Okay. We have the summing formula here, and we can evaluate P, RT, reverberation time of this room, which will be very simply O.16 multiplied the volume and divided the total absorption area at top. And it comes out 1.8 seconds. Is this estimate correct following your ears? Following my ears, it's not. The reverberation time in this room is around 1 second, not more. It's not more than 1 second. So some of the assumptions made for doing this computation are probably wrong. Some of the surface here is providing more absorption than this estimation. Let me adjust the value, not the surface, the absorption are wrong, for getting a more accurate estimate. Let's assume, for example, that the concrete is not 0.02 but is 0.03. That the walls are not 0.1 but are 0.15, that the screen is 0.3, that the furniture is 0.1, and 10 people is 1 square meter per guy. Okay, now the result is much more realistic. My ears tell me that the reverberation time in this room is around 1 second. The estimation is now start to be close to the correct value. If you have measured the value, you can really tune your serving model of the room until it provides you with the proper value. At this point, I can also introduce you very quickly the first way of measuring alpha. Think a room like this one. You measure first with the room empty, and you get one value of reverberation time, and you tune your summing formulation until it provides exactly the value of the reverberation time measured in the room. So you tuned your empty room. Then you bring in your material. For example, chairs. chairs like this one, upholstered chairs, 12 chairs. You bring them inside the room. Measure again the reverberation time, which of course is shorter. At this point, you make a second setting estimation, which must bring you the measured value, adjusting the coefficient of alpha of the seat until you get the proper value. Let me complete the example. This is the theoretical value. Let me write here, measure RP equals 1 second. So we must adjust something here and there until we get the correct value. Too much. Okay. We tuned the model. Okay. So now the room is empty, not really empty, because there is 20 people inside. When you use a room for this kind of measurement, there should be no one inside. The standard recommends that no more than 2 people stay inside the room during this kind of test. Exactly because the absorption of people is very relevant. However, this is the empty room, okay, empty room. Then you add 12 seats. So, seat, excuse me, number 12, and I will have an absorption value which is unknown. Let me write just a number here. When these seats are added, you get a new value of a tot. Let me call it a tot 2 with the room filled, which will be the same absorption which I had before, plus the absorption given by the seat. And of course, the reverberation time, let me call RT2, will be smaller, 0.16, multiplied by the volume and divided by this new value of absorption, it's smaller. But the measured RT time is not 0.95, but is 0.9 seconds. So, what is the correct absorption coefficient of your seat? You have to adjust the value here until the Sebbian formula give you the real value of your measurement. So, it's not 0.35, let me try 0.7, we are close, 0.75, 0.8, 0.85, 0.9, too much, 0.88, more or less we are there. 0.885. This is the measured absorption coefficient of your chairs obtained by using the Sebbian formulation and the rule. This is the most important reason for which reverberant rooms are built in the labs. The more reverberant is the room when it is empty, the better comes out this kind of measurement. Because in this exercise, the reverberation time will change only slightly due to the introduction of your seat. But if your room was incredibly reverberant, with 10 seconds reverberation time when empty, when you enter the seat, the reverberation time falls much more significantly. And so the estimation of alpha of your seats is much more accurate because you are measuring a bigger variation of reverberation time. So the standard for making this kind of estimation of alpha is called ISO 354. This is the standard defining how to perform this measurement of the absorption coefficient employing a reverberant rule. You first measure the room empty, then you measure again with the material under test inside, which can be carpet on the floor, which can be chairs, which can be those absorber which you install in factory substantial under the ceiling. Any kind of absorbing material can be tested this way. You insert it in the room, you repeat the measurement of the reverberation time goes down, and employing twice the same formulation, one for the empty room and another for the filled room, the room with the material inside, you adjust the coefficient of your additional material until the Sebin formula gives you the measured value with the room with the material inside. And this is an indirect method of measuring the absorption coefficient alpha, but is very often employed. Also because it provides you with a number which is sure it will work in the Sebin formula. As it has been obtained by reversing the Sebin formula, that is the magic number which works when inserted in the Sebin formula. What must be understood is the absorption coefficient which you measure this way is not the true absorption coefficient. First of all, the Sebin equation doesn't work really well in every kind of rooms. We have seen that the absorption should be uniform. But when in a very reverberant room you have only one small surface highly absorbing, which is your sample of material inside the room, one of the hypotheses of Sebin is broken. So we are using a formula which we should not use in that case. This causes artifacts, particularly when the material is strongly absorbent. If you have a very thick carpet of mineral wool, 15 cm of mineral wool, that absorbs a lot. Its absorption coefficient is close to 1. It's probably 0.98, something like that. Well, if you want to get the result in the Sebin equation here, corresponding to the experiment, you must insert in the Sebin formula a value of alpha larger than 1, which is a paradox. It should never occur how a coefficient of absorption can be larger than 1. This is not a real absorption coefficient. It is called a Sebin alpha. A Sebin alpha can be bigger than 1. Can be even 1.4 for certain type of material. You know that foam with the surface all undulated, those piece of foam which you see in Grande Fratello behind the people, you know, those pyramidal foam. That material has an incredible absorption. If you test it in a reverberant room, that material measures a value of absorption of alpha Sebin around 1.4, which in principle is wrong, but in practice it works, because if in a real room at your home you buy a piece of 2 square meter of that material and you insert in that room, the Sebin formula predicts correctly the reduction in reverberation time which will occur in this room. The formula is wrong, the value is wrong, but the two wrong things compensate each other, they do the magic, and the formula works. And this is another funny thing of acoustics, how wrong things can produce right results. It's not the only example. In acoustics there are several of these examples of saying, okay, the theory deviates from the real world, but we don't care. We still use the wrong theory with wrong values. A wrong theory with wrong values can be back in agreement with the real world. So we trickle the alpha coefficient value, and we cannot call it anymore the true absorption coefficient. It becomes the Sebin absorption coefficient, and this is what most makers of acoustical absorption products do. There are 2 good reasons for doing that. One is that it's very practical. Okay, it's a wrong value, but it works in the Sebin formula. which is the formula which acousticians do for estimating reverberation time. So you give you a data sheet of your material stating the Sabin absorption coefficient, because that are very useful for the acoustician. Second fact is commercial, much better to write a large number for an absorber than a smaller number. It's the same reason for which the power of an engine is still given in cavalli, in HP, horsepower. Why they still use horsepower for indicating the power specification of an engine instead of using kilowatts, which should be the correct unit? Because the value in kilowatt is always smaller than the value in HP. So they still rate the power of an engine in HP. It looks more powerful saying that your car has an engine of 100 HP than saying that the same engine has an engine of 70 kilowatt. 70 kilowatt does not appeal so well as 100 HP. And this is the same. This absorbing material here has a rating of alpha 7 0.9, it's good. A true alpha of 0.7 is not so good. Okay? So that's the reason for which this method of assessing the absorption coefficient of material is the most used one. Is the standard one, I would say. For most materials, what you find also in textbooks, the collection of value of alpha in which you find in the literature are always alpha 7. This kind of strange value of alpha. Understood? Everything is clear? Okay. So we have finished also for today.